Yogi Mayer, Meal 5. Yes, you were telling me about the Pioneer Corps. Tell me one of these funny incidents that you were explaining.
Pioneer Corps, the Auxiliary Military Pioneer Corps, or as we call it, Her Majesty Aliens. And then one day we were told that we would go abroad. But of course nobody would tell us where to. And we judged by, looked at our equipment, was it Norway or was it Africa? We had no idea. But then finally we were told that we would have to leave, and we went by boat from Southampton. And there were other lot of soldiers, also Pioneer Corps, who were people who were taken out of the normal army because of lack of education, bad behavior, fitness and so on. They were all put into labor corps. They were with us on board ship. And there, for the first time in my life, heard English how it is spoken properly. I never heard so many F's and C's and all that. It was amazing. And when we landed in on the other side, we then quickly realized this was France. And we went to a camp on top of a hill near Le Havre. The next morning, we had breakfast, and we never had such an abundance of food. And when one made an inquiry, we were told that the other company, which was, I think, 215s, had so many casualties that the only half of their rations was wanted by them, so we got it. When we asked what were the casualties for us, I was told everything is on the grapevine in the army, you never get told. That so many of them had landed in hospital, the near the diseases picked up with the apostles of Le Havre, that only half of them were able. And the others in the army, if you had the near disease, it was called self-inflicted wounds. And that was a criminal offense. It was like you would have shot yourself in the foot. So we had enormous amount of food. And then we started unloading flour bags, ammunition boxes and so on in the harbor. There was an enormous, enormous store of everything you could really think of, including sawmills. Everything was there ready for a war to last, I don't know how long. And the stronger ones of us, we went from one place to another carrying flour bags, I remember those, and they were 200 weights heavy, so only not many could do that. And we just somebody placed them on our shoulders and we walked across, and there somebody took them off, or two took them off our shoulders. And by the evening, we were dead tired, and we went up to our camp. And one middle of the night, suddenly alarm out. And then we were out, some of us had pyjamas, typical for German Jews. We slept in your pyjama. We took our pyjamas, brought, so took I mine. Pressing, we put our battle dress over it as quickly as possible. It's always being yelled and shouted, hurry up, and then fall in. Then we were thrown out in lorries somewhere outside Le Havre. We didn't know where. We were lying in there, and then suddenly was all falling on the side of the road, and boxes arrived with rifles in it. They were full of keys. They had been packed like that in 1919 and not opened. And one in three received a rifle. They wanted enough to go around. And the chap, there was a young Viennese, who had become a sergeant because he had tried enough others before to get his rank. He said to me, "Can you hold my rifle?" But he went and disappeared, and I never saw him again for a whole day, so I had my rifle. And then we were told to fall in, and the sergeant started, now, this is a rifle. What is this? A rifle. And he went through the whole army drill about a rifle, as it was done probably 40 years or 30 years before, until he came to a little screw. That this is a screw, and the screw is on the side, and the screw has no purpose. Therefore, it's called the lazy screw. What is it? The lazy screw. And so we did this, and finally we learned how to set arms. And when we arrived at that, we saw that our major, Woodcock, in a little car with a flag in front that he had got from somewhere, as a commandant of that village, and we had to present arms. Because for a captain, you only give buck salute. And then we were alone. We said, what will we do with the rifles? So we had some people who had served in the Spanish War. And they started, now let's clean it and do all this. And we got the whole thing going. And then we were just, I learned the news rifle up to the stage of present arms. Where the news, we heard a lot of gunfire. And the Germans broke through along the Pas-de-Calais. And we were told that the Germans had broken through, and we were issued with 5 rounds of ammunition, one clip. The company before us, they only half of them left, as I told you, they had found there was very good French wine, and they had a very good time. And when the first German tanks broke through, they jumped on the tanks with their pickle and shovels, and really killed the occupants of the first tanks. But none of them survived. And the radio was then said, alien companies of England have been thrown into battle, but most of them have not survived. That was news my wife had. We had a postcard which we could tick off. I am well, I'm not well, I'm this and so on. You couldn't write, only tick it off. We had our rifles, and we had nothing. We had even nothing to carry them. We cut down telephone wires and made swings out of them to carry them. But then there was somehow the only later we heard that the tanks had then turned towards Paris. And I remember one of my most beautiful days of my life. We went over the fields. One of them was a Cambridge graduate, very nice chaps to be with. We are sitting under a huge nut tree on a little hill on a lovely summer day. And a girl came up from the farm and said, what did we want it? And we said, we would like to eat. How would we pay? And we said, we've got French money. He said, no, she doesn't want to take French money. Did we have cigarettes? So we paid for a lunch cigarette, and we got an omelette of 12 eggs. Looked like a big cake and wine. And there we were sitting under this beautiful tree on a little hill, drinking wine and eating our omelette. That was one of the most beautiful days I can remember. It's like a painting. And then we were told the company is moving down to the docks for evacuation, but could there have 5 volunteers to go back or forth to the camp? See what happened to the tent, because we left everything behind. And then we heard that a lot of people had taken their passports with the affidavits for America with them in case there was a chance to get to America still, and they wanted them back. So, bored as we were, I said, all right, I volunteer. So, so 5 or 4 of us, with one sergeant, went on a little jeep up the hill. And drove until we got back to our wood camp. And then it was dark. So we were lying down and seeing what was going on. And then it was all right, we made our way forward to the camp. We didn't know was it occupied or not, what was going on, was it burned there or not. So when we got nearer, we heard some movements on the other side. So we put the first down into the spout. And You are not aware of gain transfer switch. You are never aware. You are then on what is going on there, what is going on. Your mind works on a different channel. You don't register feelings of that kind. Then suddenly you heard a few words remain French. I said, ah. So the sergeant got up and said, oh, des camarades, rentrez. On the other side, there were French Marines. And they didn't like us. And then we found out they had occupied the camp and had done extremely well of all the things which were left behind in that rush. And they had slit up all the kit bags where people put quickly their things in and taken things out. And the mess in the huts, you can't imagine. Everything, belongings, was piled up. Anyhow, we said this is British camp and so on. And they had what they wanted, they withdrew. And so we were there. And we were looking through for papers and so on, what we could do. And suddenly, terrible stench. Because all the meat in the cookhouse had gone off over those days in the summer. You can't imagine. And once we were, there was a big, we had soup in big kettles. We had soup for all people. So the sergeant, Danish, was Hungarian, said, let's have hot water in there. I would like to have a bath. And he had already had a crew cut, a skinhead. And he said, I want to have a bath, and I think that I can chat up Marie, which was a girl who sometimes did laundry baths before. It was very pretty. And he went in, stripped, when it was warm enough, into this big to have a bath. The monk was in, we called Marie, and said, here's Liberté, ici, Monsieur le Sergeant. And she came over, and he was up there, and he got red in his face. Anyhow, she then saw that what was going on, she squeaked and ran away. A day later, a little jeep arrived with a lieutenant, who was a Canadian, always drunk. And he was already quite over the top. And he said, what's
smelling here?
It's a cookhouse. He said, this is rotten. Take a rid of it, I said. It's the dangerous and of the spit and so on. He said, get rid of it. I said, wow, we leave Germans take over anyhow. He said, what do you think Jenny will think of us if we leave a temple of that behind? What Jenny will think of us? He left. He said, we will send a jeep up in 1 or 2 days to get you in case you are still not occupied by the Germans. So the person then he set fire to that scene. The black smoke arose with that warm meat burning, you can't imagine. It was hell. But then we heard there was a Nazi left behind, stores with cigarettes and all that stuff. So we made our way over there, and we had lived like God in France for the next 2 days. Then the jeep came to collect us, and then we came back to Le Havre. There was a big warehouse with a gallery. And we had lots and lots, all the papers we had put into a black, into kit bags, all the papers we could find. And then we went there, Sergeant Major said, come on, get rid of it. I said, yes, can we find out who the book said? Ah, rubbish, go to the, we entered it on top of the gallery. And all those things fell down, and they had to find out what's out of the floor, what was theirs. Then from Le Havre we went further on, there was Dunkirk already, we went further right up to Rennes. Then we were building a camp. The idea to build a camp in that situation. And I remember we went to Rennes to collect materials. And the whole streets were packed with refugees. And we had to go against the refugees. And in the evening we came back with the army lorry full of parts for a camp. And our sergeant, new sergeant, was on top. And he was completely exhausted. And the only country that was this, c'est la guerre, c'est la guerre, c'est la guerre. and he shouted at all the French deputies were crowding the street and they hooting to get through. And then all the French looked up to the British.
So no fun, we know the Latina.
And we were then, when we were in the middle of a football match, when the catch rider came, packed up, the drums had broken through, off you go to a railway station. And we were waiting, and near the railway station was a little village. And then they said, two of us, and I was always one of, because I was sports still, would we go over to the pub and see what's going on, and maybe how would they, because we didn't know how the French felt about us, so we left it behind. And there we heard on the radio that the Russians had occupied that Polish town, and we came back and said, hooray, the Russians are on our side. We didn't know there was this agreement between Russia and Germany about Poland. And then we went on the train, and I got a place at the end of the train with my rifle to protect the train against low-flying aircraft. I had five shots. And I traveled to the French countryside for a whole summer day, sitting in the little guardhouse right at the end, watching out the train with the fires and on the wood and so on, beautifully. And so we went then to Saint-Malo. There they were hiding into the stables there at the race course. And there again we went to the Navy canteen, and what we decided is the officers' uniforms were better than ours, so we took all officers' uniforms out, cut off the pips, and filled our respirators, which always had to be done in alert. Whenever the British Army was in danger, respirators in the alert. That is the kind that you are alert, there's danger about. So you put your respirator in the alert and be back. You threw the respirators away and packed them full of cigarettes. And then they discovered motorbikes. So there were a lot of other people, not only the Indian Pioneer Corps, there were lots of wounded people, the remnants of the British Army. And they took the motorcycles, which were in the stores by the dozen, and had motorcycle races until one or two had an accident, so that was stopped. Then the evening came, there was a boat. And all those, we had to fall in, and we marched silently in the night towards the harbor to that boat. And at both sides stood the French, not saying a word. We left them behind. When we came to the boat, there was an order, anybody found drunk, fall out, do fall out. There was a military police in white gaiters and their red caps, standing there and checking, taking people out who were drunk. And then we went on board ship. We were so packed that we only could stand. And when the ship sailed, our American police came to salute, and they were saluting, all of them knowing that they were left behind, and this was the last trip to England. The feeling even now, you know, when you think of it, of those men who did their duty, knowing that the Germans would arrive next morning or so. And then we were strafed by the German dive bomber, but we were a smallish boat, and we were in the docks, so nothing happened. Then we were allowed to open the emergency rations, which we always wanted to know what's inside. When we opened it, we found out it was chocolate, sweet chocolate biscuits packed by lions, which after two bites they had enough. Before that, we always had lived from tins, which were a hole in the middle. There was a candle inside. It was like a sleeve around the candle. That was the soup. And when you put on the candle, it heated the soup. So we were used to things, and when we arrived in somewhere in England, probably Southampton, I don't know where, we were marched to the train, and all the weapons we had taken from with us when from the race course, because we were still only had occasionally a rifle, but we had by then captured Bren guns and everything to take back, right? Because you felt happier if you had something in your hand, see, so. Some of us didn't know how to operate, but we had it. This all had to be handed in, and we were packed in trains. And then we went by train to London, to Alexander Palace, and we were allowed to phone our families that we had arrived. Then we had to fall in. Oh no, because Buddha wanted in St. Malo, the major said, was sitting in the middle of the field. He had just married, professional officer, and he was burning all his equipment, camping equipment, his leather, everything made done by beautiful, all this had to be left there. He was not allowed, even as an officer, to take more than a respirator. So everything he burned. And the sergeant had the captain had talked with him. And he called us, section number 9, fall in. And we had fallen as you were, whatever we had on. It was a terrible sight. We had to march out. And then we opened all the march, and the captain was also sozzled. Took a big bottle of perfume water, which the major had given to him, and he just probably wanted to take to his wife. And he went along and split it all of us and said to him, sir, your perfume will get back to England as I told you. It was a bet. When we were in England, the major then asked fall in, and we were falling in for inspection, and he went along and he had in his hand a torch which was alive. That was a stake of those terribly nice professional officers who were not used for the British Army but only for aliens. And then I saw my son the first time after a year, and he cried bitterly when he saw that strange man kissing his mother. And that was, and then much later, we had various things in England and Pioneer were also funny, but then one day a man arrived in uniform, and I never saw somebody having such an ill-fitting uniform. And instead of the little cap we had, he had it on in the center. He just didn't fit him. And his name was Hartmann. And he worked with us. We were building a camp near Kamhausen. From time to time, the sergeant said, Herr Hartmann or Mr. Hartmann? And Mr. Professor, and then he suddenly said, look, I am looking for people for the commandos. And could you come? And he had a room in town. And we had to meet him there, and he would then take the particulars. And he said, I will forward this. And he was a recruiting person from the Special Service. I got a bit more friendly with him. He was an arms trader in Hungary, which he already owns. He was already in his 50s. Looked like Richard Wagner. And he was, and then he said to me, look, I can't forward you, so you've got a family. But it's impossible, you've got a little boy. And he said, that's the reason why I want to. He says, but what about the risk? I said, that is not mine. I want to. Finally, I have had enough of all this pioneer and all that nonsense and so on. I just can't stand it any longer. I want to do something. So, one day we were called up, by then we were in Sennebridge, mm-hmm. The sergeant met me there, loaded two little jeeps. And the sergeant major looked at us and said, God, what do you want to be commandos? And there were two or three people there who wouldn't think the commando type. We didn't know better. So we left, and we all, of course, sang this goodbye, sergeant major. And we left. And when we arrived in London, I had to report to Northumberland Avenue, and I saw a major, whom we afterwards called Father Christmas, who said, yes, you, that was interesting, said, you, the commandos, let me, are you willing to accept the risk? And that question was asked by everybody later on, that which published the book, I Accept the Risk. I said, yes. I said, whatever commando or not, it will be risky for you. And you have a child. But I said, as long as I know that they are secure, and they go home in England, I would like to have a girl. And then we arrived in the back, and then we arrived with the others in Petersfield, beautiful house. And then we arrived, unpicked our kit and went down for dinner. There was a table laid in white tablecloths, and there were servants with our evening, sir. And we were totally treated as we were an officer corps. And the next morning we started with training, and there was no appeal, and there was no, nobody had checked our uniforms, and we could do what we liked, and so on. And so we thought this was not quite clear, but we didn't know. All we knew, we were in a special training school, STS. And we operated under the word STS for a very long time. We went then to Pokhol. From Pokhol we went to, Pokhol, it was a demonstration. We were already very much in training and quite fit and all that. Remember, an island, somebody, name was Kaminsky, Putzi, we called him. He later on was the photographer of the Mount Everest exhibition with Lord Hunt. Very tough, little man, enormously tough. And he and I had to go as a pair to demonstrate. So, first thing was taking one of them, can't swim or is injured across the canal, and then blowing up the islands, all those silly things. Once we were in the water there, our young captain, he was a dead, not captain, threw a stick of gelatine into the water to make it warlike. But the Indian didn't know that in water, explosives travel much faster than in the air because they are confined. We both are completely knocked out. We couldn't move our legs, so anyhow, we got across, then we recovered and so on, and then we had all kinds of things. In it. Parachuting and so, and there I really learned that you can't, what I always felt from it, you can't be brave if you haven't got fear. If you are not afraid, you are not brave. You have no courage. Courage is based on fear. For example, we were told before us, we jumped a group of 12 poles went. And they were instructed that if you see the green light, you jump. But when you see the green light the first time, it's only a check whether everything works. Have you understood? So when the green light comes on, you do not jump. And then we jumped at that time out of Whitney, two at the time. And you had to swing in the hole and jump, and then the next one swung in, and so on. And they jumped when the green light went the first time, not understanding what it meant, and they all landed in Manchester. But we were told some of them were injured, but we thought it was a normal exercise. They didn't understand, you see. So, and when we jumped, of course, the first time you are very excited, but to do it. The worst is the second jump, because you know what fear is. Once you know how horrible fear is, and you have to overcome it, that is, then you need a lot of courage to overcome it. Beginning, the first time you didn't know really it was sensational, so, but when you suddenly felt this terrible fear when you're out of the plane before the chute opens, right? That comes back to you, and that haunts you on the first meet of the third jump, then it comes to you. And then, we were in various beautiful mansion houses, stages and castles and so on. From time to time, groups disappear. And we never asked about people for, funnily enough, three or four of them I knew from Germany, who were in the same youth movement than I. And people then came, since we would now be all promoted to non-commissioned officer, and every strike would mean a pip. The moment you go into action, if you were at one pip, you would be a second lieutenant, two pips, three lieutenants, three pips, you would be a captain, you would be a second in the fields, and you had to form six groups of four, because you would go into action four of you together, a virus operator, a specialist on something else, one person in charge, etc., an all-round person. So we formed groups, and I had in my group a very good chap, who was a wireless operator, and one other one, when you were from Germany, who was a dairy man, half Jewish, enormous strength. And he knew how to live off the land, how to kill chickens, and so on, Miles man, and somebody else. And group after group left, And the moment the group was directed to leave, we didn't see them. They went to another part of the building. There was no goodbye or something. They just disappeared. Nobody wanted to know. That's the first thing we learned. Never ask questions. And we had all this weapon training in some exercise in England, one of the biggest wars, to check the security of Portland, of